Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 99 for July 23rd, 2008. Free the fruit. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/MacBreak. And by Drobo, the intelligent automated data storage device. To learn more and receive an instant $50 off your own Drobo, visit drobo.com/MacBreak. And by Visa. We all have things we like to think about. Online fraud shouldn't be one of them. Because with every purchase, Visa prevents, detects, and resolves online fraud. Safe, secure, Visa. This is MacBreak Weekly, and we are really pleased to gather together some of the greatest experts in the history of Apple and Macintosh. No, that's really hyperbole. We're just glad to be here talking about Macintoshes in our 99th episode. Merlin Mann is here from 43 Folders, and you look nice today. Hello, Mr. Mann.
Hello, Leo. How are you today?
Very well. Good to talk to you.
It's very nice to be here.
We were talking, and we will talk in a moment about the best ways to conserve battery life on your new 3G iPhone, which you don't have. You're still on an old one.
No, I have what we refer to in the industry as the old iPhone.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Is that the old iPhone?
That's the old. Have you upgraded the firmware, though?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So really, the truth is you have 90% of what the rest of us.
Leo, since this came out, I haven't gotten a thing done. I've just been calculating tips on every available. You know what's really good? Have you seen AAAAA, a excellent tip calculator?
You left out the space at the front.
That's why I was at the top. Okay.
We'll talk about that, too. Arnold Kim is here. We're really pleased to have Arnold on. Should I call you Dr. Kim?
You don't have to. Just call me Arnold.
Big article about Arnold in the New York Times this week. Arnold is the founder and the guy behind Mac Rumors. Was at going to medical school during the early days of Mac Rumors and now practiced medicine for some time. And now you've decided maybe this internet thing's got some legs.
Yep.
Giving up the medical practice, huh?
Yep. June 30th was my last day. And now I'm full-time web Mac Rumors and, you know, whatever other projects I want to work on.
Very cool. That's very exciting.
I'm very excited. Very happy with the decision.
How's mom feel?
Parents were surprisingly supportive about it.
Okay.
You always worry about, it never really changes, but you worry about your parents like agreeing with your decisions. But they were actually on board.
Wow. I know if I had made it through med school, as if I even made it through college. But if I had made it through med school, my parents might have had some qualms had I decided to give it all up for podcasting.
That's funny you should say that, because my entire childhood, I mean, from the beginning, certain things were banged into my head. One was that I was going to go to college and I was going to make something of myself. And the second was my mother really wanted me to be a blogger.
Oh, interesting.
From very early on, I went to special schools. I had the shoes, all of it. And so really, obviously, my mother's very happy.
So does she have a bumper sticker, you know, my son, the blogger?
My son was blogger of the month at the internet.
Andy Anaka is going to join us in just a little bit, but we're going to talk about Mac stories. It's kind of fun to have Mr. Mac Rumors on because we usually are quoting Mac Rumors throughout most of the show. So we're getting it from the rumor's mouth, so to speak. First of all, let me ask you, Arnold.
Yes.
Has Apple ever sued you? Has Apple ever come down on you? Do you hear from them at all?
Yeah, I hear from them intermittently. I try to stay out of their, legal sites. But, there's definitely been, photos or, I think there was an iPod interface movie that was posted. And they'll certainly send out cease and desist letters to get that stuff off. I mean, I think, as you know, MacRumors tends to be more of an aggregator. And so in that way, we can avoid that sort of, too much legal pressure. But, the threat's there. But like I said, I've had a reasonably friendly relationship with Apple's legal department, where they'll tell me to stop doing something.
Hi, Arnold. It's us again.
And I'll stop doing it.
Yeah.
Do they ever harm your pets?
Ever get a snake in the mailbox? Anything like
that? Let me put that differently, Arnold. Have you ever been able to prove that Steve harms your pets? Because I imagine he's pretty slick about it.
Now, that's a leading question, Saw.
You ever find, like, beard hairs in your cat bowl or anything like that?
The funniest interaction, I think, was back, I don't know if I'm sure you all remember, back before WWDC a few years ago, Apple leaked the G5 Power Mac on their store site.
Briefly, yeah.
Yeah, it was like it was up for like, I don't know, half an hour, and like it was like a week before. It was like it was in the evening too, and you know, people send it in, we posted it, blah blah blah. You know, it's just factual information and from their own website, but I got a call from Apple Legal at like 2 a.m, like asking, like sort of a, it's like a friend. Obviously, at 2 a.m, it's sort of a frantic call. You know, they're trying to plug up. You know, obviously it was too late. There's nothing they could do about it, and you know, they were real friendly about it, and they're just trying to.
Arnold, would you mind terribly? There's this picture. We're not too happy about it. Is there? And what did you do? Did you say thanks? But I can't.
I took it off for them, but it was too late.
Oh, so you're very cooperative.
Well, you know, I mean, Apple Legal involvement's usually an interesting sign. You know, it usually triggers a lot more. It's confirmation. You know, people. I mean, obviously in that situation, you know, for the people that actually saw it on Apple's site, they were pretty sure. But you know, I mean, for people who weren't up at like whatever weren't browsing the web at 9 p.m.,
nobody saw it.
It serves as additional confirmation, you know, and then same with the image and stuff. I don't, you know, usually it's out there. I don't work too hard to, you know, it would take a lot of effort to try to fight it with little gain for me.
Did you ever have a story that you just knew you couldn't run, but you just knew it was true? And you were just sitting on it and just dying to run it.
I don't know. There's always stuff that makes me a little nervous. Depending on, you know, someone had submitted some iPhone interface or iPod interface movies. It looked real, you know, but you can never tell.
I know. There's so many fakes out there.
And I tend to err on the side of caution and tend not to, you know, unless I'm a little more sure. Unless there's the site, you know, unless it originates from somewhere that's. More obvious, but you know, I mean, like I said, I don't publish a whole lot of, you know, breaking, you know, just straight from like, you know, original.
You're not like Think Secret was, you don't run that risk.
That's a conscious decision in some ways. Cause you know, there's obviously you open yourself up to a lot more legal issues.
Right. I think it's been interesting to watch the site. I'm not a constant reader like anybody else when things start heating up around a product or a suspected past. It is a place that I go, and I mean this is just an observation from somebody who doesn't visit the site a lot, but I think it's interesting how I used to write you guys off as just another one of these squirrely make stuff up and put up a crappy Photoshop picture site, which I think today increasingly is not true and probably not fair.
Oh, no, very much not so. Yeah, I think you've become...
Well, I want to out myself having had that opinion and then say that like a site like, you know, Boing Boing in its heyday, you become an aggregator, as you say. You're the first place people want to hand stuff to if they find something good. So it seems like, has your role changed over the years? I mean, like when you're a young blogger or a young publisher, younger... you know, you're so obsessed with just getting lots of stuff up. Has your role changed to being that of an editor who's really kind of just trying to think what goes on the second page versus the home page and stuff like that?
I mean, you know, in some ways it hasn't. I mean, obviously when I had a smaller audience, posting things didn't have as much impact, you know, in terms of I didn't get that much feedback earlier on. But, you know, I think throughout, I guess what I tell people is I take rumors very seriously. It's not, you know, I think rumor sites in general sort of have a bad reputation. People sort of see them as, you know, just, you know, unreliable, just posting gossip and whatever. And I don't know, maybe just from because I had a science background, I don't know, I'm very sort of more evidence-based, you know, certainly sort of trying to link back rumors, trying to see which sites are more reliable. And, you know, I definitely take a lot of sort of pride or editorial, you know, pride in sort of selecting what, you know, what's likely and what's not likely. And trying to keep that straight and also trying to like publish stuff that's a little more reliable, you know. And, you know, the value of Mac Rumors, of course, besides, you know, publishing these things and sort of aggregating and like linking them back, is, you know, it also draws a large community. So, you know, obviously, you know, whenever anything comes out, people just like talking about it, you know.
Yeah, your forums seem to generate a lot of traffic.
Yeah, no, and then definitely during, like you said, like during launch weeks or, you know, events or, you know, lead up to Macworld or WWDC or, you know, the iPhone launch was crazy. There were like, you know, 1,000 comments on a particular story, you know, on any particular story about, you know, Mobile Me not working right or you know.
I hadn't heard about that. Were there some problems with that?
Yeah, I hear there's some problems.
Yeah.
Small problem. I'm sure they're all fixed now. Probably.
There's a lot to talk about today. Before we get into the actual news stories, our guest Arnold Kim is the a guy behind Mac Rumors, and Merlin Mann's with us. Andy Inako, as soon as he gets his Skype problems ironed out, will join us. I do want to welcome a new sponsor to Mac Break Weekly, and it's the great folks at Visa. Visa is the card we recommend when you shop online. You know, you all have better things to do when you're shopping online than worrying about online fraud. You know, you got to decide white, black, 16 gigs, 8 gigs. These things are important. Well, that's the good news about Visa. Online fraud is not an issue. All purchases you make are safe and secure with Visa. I made a recent purchase and I didn't use Visa. And boy, I regret that $2,000 later. Had I used Visa, I would have been fine. Visa has real-time fraud monitoring. It's really sophisticated software that they use to monitor your transactions. Anything out of the ordinary, they see it right away. Maybe you've received that call. Did you buy something in Bosnia last night at 4 a.m? No? Don't worry. We'll take care of it. Zero liability. That's the deal. You're not liable for unauthorized purchases. We're really glad to have them aboard and remind you when you shop online to use your Visa. That's peace of mind. Safe, secure Visa. Man, I wish I'd used my Visa card when I bought those cameras. But that's another story entirely.
So, one of those things where you got it off eBay and they actually sent you like a picture of a camera?
You know, they didn't have the courtesy to even send the picture. That's really what pissed me off. They didn't even, you know, they said, here's the tracking number. And there was nothing ever sent under that tracking. It was just a made up tracking. They could have sent
it like 19NZF7 strawberry simple for pie.
Exactly.
It's not even a real number.
It wasn't even they could have had the courtesy to send an empty box, but no, nothing. And of course, I bought it through PayPal, right? Instead of my credit card. So you have to go to PayPal. And PayPal said, here's your $200, but it was $2,000. Well, it was only insured for $200. So that's life. I've learned Visa from now on, and that's not part of the commercial. That's the true story. So there are so many great stories to talk about. We're still in the iPhone aftermath. In fact, you said you were just in the Apple store in San Francisco, Merlin, and there are still lines.
Yeah, I was at the Stockton Street flagship store yesterday, and there was totally a line. And I guess they had been out. I have not been following this, but I guess everybody had been out. And then somehow, maybe through the doctor's website, I'm not sure, but suddenly people became aware, maybe through some kind of spidey sense, but suddenly were aware that more phones were available.
There are phones.
And of course, there's nothing like, you know, rain checks. Of course, it's sweat equity. You got to stand there to get it. So people just turned out and started waiting again. Yeah.
According to Mac Rumors, iPhone sales doubled this time around. Is that right? Twice the sales last year?
That's what AT&T said. So that's US sales, I guess.
That's amazing. Do you think that's the price, Arnold? Is that what did it?
Certainly the price. You know, I mean, I mean, just anecdotally, I have friends that you know are on board now. You know, people that aren't tech people who are like, you know, once the new iPhone, you know, was announced, they were ready to buy. And you know, I mean, twice as much is great, but you know that, and that's you know, that's obviously limited by the stock they have. If they had more stock, I'm sure they could sell more.
Yeah, most of the stores are sold out. If you use the Apple iPhone checker, sold out almost everywhere. And yet, I have to think that some of these people who are buying their first iPhone are not having the experience Apple would like them to have. Shall I put it that way? Let me list the problems.
Again, we're going to get mail. I never get mail. I never get mail about this show. I think people know to leave me alone. But I got a fair amount, for me, of email with people on both sides of what we talked about last week.
Well, anytime you say iPhone, you're going to get mail from people who say talk less about it, talk more about it. That's not.
Tell you what, I got a lot of email from really non-insane people who were like, you know, I'm glad you said something. I think that was kind of weird the way that went.
It did. So, well, you were right. And you know what? It's still not going so well. I'll give you an example. The sync starts with a backup that takes an hour or two.
I get that every day.
Every time.
Yeah.
This is bad. Excuse me. Hello. Sync should be very quick after the first time. The phone crashes all the time. I think that's the applications, but I don't know. And I've restored it now. I've had it since the 12th, so that means I've had it 11 days. Restored it twice, full restore. You know, the kind of restore where you hold down all the buttons and you hold them down, till finally it says, okay, connect it to iTunes, please. And it downloads a new version of the firmware for some reason and reinstalls on top of it. Still having problems. I think I'm not sure if it's the location-based. I'm not sure if these applications... You know, part of it's got to be, if you're an application developer, you didn't have any time to beta test. You're throwing your beta out there, and many of them have released new versions. I get updates, several updates a day now.
Yeah, I mean, you also couldn't actually have anyone to beta test.
Right,
right. Yeah, Craig Hockenberry has been a very... C. Hockenberry, who makes Twitterific. I'm talking to his Twitter name, C. Hockenberry. But Craig has been...
I call him Chockenberry, it could be worse.
Chockenberry?
Yeah, Chockenberry.
But he's been very vocal about this, and I think he's not the only one. That, man, it's hard to make software if you can't test it with people. And then find out or isolate what's going on. I mean, there's a lot of stuff around NDA that's really frustrating developers right now.
Twitterific's fairly stable. Twinkle crashes half the time on me. I love Twinkle, but it's crashing all the time. And both of these applications, well, Twinkle's been a cracked iPhone application for a long time, so it's not like they're brand new to this. Twitterific, you know, Craig's a good programmer. Twitterific's a great piece of software.
I think it's a fantastic app. I love it.
So, yeah, you just got to wonder if all these new people are buying these iPhones, what are they thinking? Are they thinking this is the normal experience?
They're thinking, I had no idea that it was this hard to calculate 20% of something.
How many tip applications have you installed?
You know, I haven't installed any, but it is pretty mind-boggling. I know it's kind of the easy joke to make about the iPhone store, but there is a tremendous amount of crap showing up. So the question, though, Leo, one thing is, each of these lives in their own sandbox, right? You can't access data from other places. Right. Is it fair to say that if something's crashing, it's crashing because of your app? Do they have a way to know?
Oh, when you say it's sandboxed, yes, because I'll tell you, I can launch an app and the whole phone resets. So something.
But in other words, you can't. I'm sorry. I'm not a developer. I'm an idiot. But like, if your app crashes consistently at the same place, I mean, obviously that could be something with location services that's not.
That's
right.
What it looks like to me. Yeah.
But is it your suspicion? It's usually the app.
No, you don't know. It could be an API call that's not coming back, and the app maybe not trapping it properly, or maybe it's coming back with garbage that the app is not responding to. Go ahead, Arnold.
It's probably a combination of things. I mean, you know, with Mac OS X or, you know, Unix and stuff, you know, applications are supposed to be in their own space. So, you know, an application theoretically shouldn't be able to crash or reset the system. And usually that's a sign of, you know, obviously that's an OS, that's a bug in
either
the API or the OS.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and then, you know, certainly I'm sure it's 2.0, so whatever bugs there might be.
Have you heard any rumors about 2.01 anytime soon?
Well, it's been floating around. I mean, you know, Boy Genius report had posted that they found 2.01 version numbers in their web logs, you know, from iPhones browsing their site. And I should double check our logs. And yeah, so they exist. So they're in there. They're out there. I guess people within Apple are testing them. So, you know, presumably it's coming soon. And you know, I'm not sure. Who knows when? No one said anything. And, you know, a 0.01 upgrade is probably just going to be bug fixes rather than any new features.
Yeah, well, but, that's, you know, what I'm looking for.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Well, August 20th, though, they're releasing, you know, to 20 more countries. So I don't know if that's going to require more carrier updates or whatnot. So maybe that would be a last, you know, the last date we could probably see it.
Have you had problems with yours, Arnold?
I've had some crashing problems, of course, you know, but honestly, I haven't been using it like I use my old iPhone. Mm. I've been home a lot these last 2 weeks. And, you know, so I haven't been actually using the phone portion of it very much. So, you know, I can't say I've, you know, from a phone perspective, from even a 3G like roaming perspective, but definitely I've seen the application crashes. But to give you a different perspective, though, you know, because we're sort of hardcore, you know, and we had the
we're
first
not typical.
IPhone.
Yeah.
Right. And, I, you know, I have two friends who just bought the 3G iPhone and did not have the previous iPhone, and they're still amazed by Safari. Like, they're, you know, the one I spoke with yesterday was like, I love it. You know, I don't even know what I did without it. You know, it's like
a browser that works. Wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And he had a Treo before. So, you know, he's still in the honeymoon period where he's very happy about, you know, and most people aren't downloading 100 apps like we are, perhaps.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just looking. I probably have 40 different apps.
kind of bummed that Scott's not here today, because I got to say, and I really wish you were here, because I don't want to sound like I'm ragging him. I have not heard anything about the kind of stuff he was talking about with activation problems.
You know what? In fact, I want to apologize, because I think that what Scott was talking about, he was saying phones were bricked, and I think there was a nomenclature error in that, and I do wish you were here to...
It's a nomenclature error that I was making, too. They were not permanently bricked, no. So that was not fair to say.
They hadn't been activated. There were activation slowdowns, and if you upgrade and you can't activate, you can't use it. Not
they had
brick.
They had the functionality of a brick.
Yes, but soon not to be bricked. And as far as I know, and this is where I'd like to talk to Scott, but because he was the one who said he had a lot of email, I'm willing to bet that every one of those people, once it was activated, were back to normal.
Yeah.
These were people who were upgrading.
What about you, Arnold? Have you heard last week? Scott Warren, one of the folks who's on the show, said that he was hearing from a lot of people saying that their phones still, as of last whatever Wednesday, still couldn't get activated. Had you been hearing anything about that? Yeah.
No, I mean, obviously on launch day it was terrible. No one, you know, anyone who did anything to their iPhone, upgrade firmware, or got a new iPhone, couldn't activate. Like all, I mean, I think it was like 9 p.m. before things started shaking loose, but not as of Tuesday or Monday. I hadn't heard anything like
that. He probably was seeing a backlog of mail from those days. I think it's all better now. Now, MobileMe still has problems. In fact, you're reporting on Mac Rumors that there's still a problem with MobileMe mail.
Yeah, 1% of users apparently are unable to access their mail, and 1% is not an insignificant number. So
it's 100,000 or more. I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah, yeah, and I've definitely heard from people who are complaining. You know, not having email for 4 or 5 days is probably unforgivable. You know, in some ways, but you know, Apple posted a brief, finally acknowledged it, and said, you know, there's a problem with the server affecting 1% of users, and they didn't really give a time frame for a fix. And as of last check, there were still people commenting, like as of like a couple hours ago, that it still wasn't working.
That's fairly serious, especially if you're using it for your work. What kind of physician were you, Dr. Kim?
I was a nephrologist, which is a kidney doctor.
So a guy calls you, he's having trouble peeing. Would you be using the iPhone for a critical situation like that, or are you using some other phone just to be safe?
I would use the iPhone.
Really? But, all right. So you trust it enough. You think it's reliable enough.
To receive phone calls?
To receive important emergency phone calls from a guy in...
Urine-related calls.
In urinary tract pain.
I would take my urine-related calls on the iPhone.
Okay. We just wanted to clarify that you put your pee where you... Never mind. Enough jokes. You probably heard them all, and so we're going to stop right there. So there are some actually huge stories. Merlin and I were talking before the show about Robert Scoble's blog post in which he said, and I think this is really right on, that tech blogs have kind of focused too much on business, and we've lost our joie de geekery. And so I'm going to cut back a little bit on the business news, but there is a big business story today, which is that Apple had the biggest June it's ever had, that Apple sales are through the roof. They had a $1 billion profit in Q3 2008. They sold a gob of Macintoshes, almost 2.5 million Macintoshes, 11 million iPods, and their stock plummeted. Their stock tanked. It went, phew. Now, I guess you could say it's a big sell-off, but you could also say it had something to do with the fact that they warned that the summer quarter wasn't going to be as good. They expected a drop in sales coming up.
Will Shipley had a great tweet yesterday, quoting here, "Jesus Christ rises, announces Apple is the chosen company. Stock down $30 in after-hours trade."
Exactly. But it's not the first time we've seen this. I guess people sell on, you know, they take some profits.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard to predict. I think there's similar conversation every time Apple has that.
Well, and there's a lot of, I mean, there was, I have not followed this, and I don't mean to just, you know, stick my hand in a hornet's nest, but there's also people said they were very concerned about Steve's health. And then I guess from a Mac Rumor standpoint, what do you know about that, Arnold? What the reaction was to that?
I just know what everyone else has said, you know, and it's probably from, you know, just from having a medical background, I've actually sort of avoided posting too many or any rumors about Steve Jobs' health, just because I do think it's sort of a private matter.
Well, Apple is, that's exactly. Now, this is, by the way, a little change from Apple, which probably fueled these rumors. They said Steve's health is a private matter. He serves at the pleasure of the board of directors, and his health is not public.
It's kind of ghoulish.
In a way, I think they're saying we're not going to talk about this. And right. I can understand why the market now would get a little more skittish.
Sure.
You're familiar with the Whipple procedure, of course.
I'm familiar with what he had. I certainly understand. Obviously, investors are going to be interested in his health because he's definitely the
linchpin, the cornerstone.
Right.
Yeah. Although, as we've said on the show before, he's done a good job of putting in place a transition team if need be. Yeah, he's got good people behind him.
Sure, sure. It seems like it. I mean, there was a New York Times piece today, which you may have seen, which was a little more reassuring.
What did they say?
They said that here I am spreading rumors already about his health. But they said that that he'd had another surgery this year to address the malnutrition issue, and that the cancer had not returned.
Excellent, excellent.
From the New York Times.
That's not a rumor. When the Times says that, that's they're the Journal of Record. They don't make stuff up.
Yeah, especially if it's about WMDs.
Did you see? I'm sorry. This is completely off. This is completely off topic. But did you see that Barack Obama wrote a letter to the Times about his Iraq plans? They published it. McCain writes a letter to them, and they said no. They sent it back. They said we need rewrite this. Now, huh. Is right. It's like what? What? this guy is the Republican, the nominal Republican nominee, and you're just going to say, take this back and rethink it. It's a little odd. Anyway, that has nothing. We don't talk politics on the show. That kind of surprised me. It was like, what? So, but the New York Times, presumably, if they publish this story, they have some pretty good facts on it. So that would make sense that he had a Whipple, which can sometimes cause nutritional issues, right? And that might be why he's looking so very thin and drawn and gaunt. And maybe he's feeling better now. You're really quiet, Arnold.
No. It sounds like a plausible theory. It sounds like
I feel guilty. I feel really not guilty. I feel I have to say, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just something that's on my mind, but I think people should be allowed to draw their own lines with what's on and off the
table. Absolutely.
That. If you say things like, the president's child, you're not allowed to make fun of her. My health, we're not going to talk about that. Yeah. I think that's, maybe I'm being cynical or stupid, but I mean, I think that's reasonable for somebody to not have to talk about what the doctor told them.
You can say, I'm not going to talk about it. You can't say you shouldn't talk about it. And I think it's not inappropriate for people like us in the press to speculate.
I think what you could say, and I don't know, again, I haven't thought about this a lot, but I would be more comfortable with someone saying, well, tell us a little bit about the general plan if something were wrong. I think that's different.
They have said that. And they have talked about Cook and the various people they have in place.
Might sound like a distinction without a difference. I just think people deserve the right to their own privacy.
Oh, I know. I agree with you 100%. Absolutely 100%. Steve has every right to be private about it. But it's natural for, especially if it seems to be affecting the market, it's natural for news sources to talk about it. Now, some say, and that Jim Cramer and others have kind of pumped this up to create some drama, unnecessary drama. I don't know if that's the case. That's what Dvorak believes.
Well, I'm going to start taking a lot of my advice from Cramer and Dvorak.
Dvorak said this was not a story until Jim Cramer really raised it as an issue. And CNBC followed along.
People take him seriously. I mean, is he somebody that people, is he like considered like a really wise person about?
I don't think
he's an entertainer.
He's
really
an entertainer. Yes, that's what I think.
So, I mean, if Bozo the Clown or Darth Vader or Ann Coulter said something, I'd take it with a grain of salt because they're characters. They're not real people.
However, you got to remember the stock market is really, it's really a casino.
Especially now where you're looking for, I mean, on the one hand, I have to guess you're sitting there going, wow, I really do not want to screw the pooch on this. I want to wait till the last minute before I decide to pull the plug out.
Right. Right.
You're going to go on rumors as it lies.
Right. It is. There's a certain entertainment value and there's a certain, there are some people who would like to keep this stuff churned up. But we're not going to do it. We're going to move on. I think the most interesting thing from the point of view of an enthusiast in that financial results call was Steve saying, quote, several more wonderful new products will launch in the coming months in the Apple press release.
Yep.
End of September, it looks like there will be significant additions and or changes to the product line. What do you think this means, Arnold?
Well, yeah, no, everyone picked up on that. I mean, Apple, you know, if you listen to any of their financial reports, they always say, you know, we're very excited about our product line. So that, yeah, I mean,
that's,
you know, that's
like Jim Cramer saying, wah! Okay.
Right. You can't, they just have to say that. That's right.
He's downgraded it from a strong wah, just wah.
He's the Charlie Callis of the financial markets.
God, I love Charlie Callis.
I'm sorry, Arnold. You just get used to this after a while.
No, but listening to it this time, and I'm sure you all have listened to these before. You know, I mean, they were very specific. I think it was, I guess, Oppenheimer. Who was the guy that was talking?
The CFO. Yeah, I can't remember his name. Yeah.
So, you know, he was very specifically laid out. Said, well, this, you know, this is what Apple does. We introduce a brand new, you know, basically a brand new product with new technology that, you know, no one else can match. And offers, you know, the customer like something that they've never really had before, or seen before, and then, you know, it's priced a little high, you know, it's priced appropriately, and then it sort of, you know, over time we can use economics to, you know, and scale to bring it down, and, you know, I mean, clearly they were talking about, you know, the iPod and the iPhone, and, you know, so it really made you think, well, there's something else coming down the line, and not just a MacBook revision, which is what everyone's expecting.
Yeah,
you know,
something pretty exciting. Let's welcome Andy Iannocco in. He's at the Automat right now in downtown Manhattan and is joining us via Skype. Hello, Andy.
The hard and hard out cheese sandwich, it's just the tops.
At
Leo.
Only 25 cents.
Yes.
Did you ever eat at Horn and Hard Art?
No, unfortunately, I only know it from 1950s musicals.
When I was kid, I remember vividly. I was pretty young. I probably was six, you know, because I was born in 56. So it was probably early 60s or late 50s. Remember putting a quarter in a vending machine in a restaurant, and the food comes out of the machine. You open the door, and there it is. And there's women on the other side putting new food in. Very weird.
I have a friend who still will not go to a certain deli in New York. Hang on. Who still will not go to a deli in New York because it replaced a Horn and Hard Art.
Oh,
so,
shocking.
That's my favorite deli. Yes.
Shocking. Andy Iannocco, welcome. It's good to have you. We're sorry we got started without you. Andrew, let me introduce some of the people. We've never had Arnold Kim on. He is, I don't know if you know him, but he is the head guy at Mac Rumors. And Andy, I'm sure you know, is with the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial.
Hey, Andy.
Hello.
And, of course, Marilyn Mann.
We're talking about the new Apple set-top box, of course.
Yes, we're very excited. What we're talking about, finished talking about the financial call and the press release in which Apple basically said big changes coming end of September. And we've now just begun the speculation of what it might be. Now, it's good that you came in, Andy, because you're the guy who has been saying, I want to see a tablet. And that's exactly what some of the speculation is.
Yeah, well, that would be really, really cool. I'm not guessing that's going to be... I'm not sure if I've seen enough signs that there's going to be a real shipping tablet in September, though. I would have said that they're going to really go after these really good, really, really cheap sub-$1,000 notebooks. But September would be kind of the wrong time to do that. You'd want to have those on the shelves by June, July, or at least make sure people know that they're shipping in August so that when it's time to send the kids off to school, you're sending them off to school with a $500 Apple notebook in their backpack. I'm drawing a blank. I would love to see a half work slate from Apple, but it could be just about anything.
It sounds, though. I mean, the way Peter Oppenheimer is talking and the way Jobs talked in the press release, it sounds like, let me give you the quote, because it's, it's pretty impressive sounding. Let me see if I can find it here. I'm looking through Mac Rumors, a fine website for this kind of thing. Apple is busy finishing several more wonderful new products to launch in the coming months. That sounds to me like more than just a rev on the MacBooks.
Yeah, it does sound like something big. But what I'm looking for before I'm starting to believe any sort of a tablet Mac or a tablet touch device is I'm starting to look at what sort of software is going to be running on it. So I could really believe them doing something like what they did, with the Apple TV, where they were very much announcing it early to make a preemptive strike against anybody else who wanted to make a similar thing. And the information that I've seen publicly seems to say that they want to make sure they jump out the gate first and really just devastate the hopes and ruin the day of anybody who is planning anything similar to this. I'm just not, like I said, but doing a tablet is more than just putting it out there and hoping that software developers come. They would have to come out the gate with at least two or three really, really key apps.
Mac Daily News says, I don't know how reliable this is, think MacBook screen, possibly a bit smaller in glass, with iPhone-like, but fuller-featured multi-touch, gesture library, full OS 10. This is why they bought PA Semi, possibly with Immersion's haptic technology. That'd be fun. Slot-loading SuperDrive, accelerometer, GPS.
Yeah. Plus, you touch a button and unfolds into the Jetsons car with 8 cup holders.
If I'm wrong, I like to be wrong really early, so I'll go ahead and get this down. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. I think this is Alex's little like fantasy thing. I don't think this is ever going to. It could happen at some point. I don't think it's going to happen soon.
Great, Merle. We get to spend 10 weeks working on the song and the choreography for our BS dance. It was BS, BS, BS. It never had a chance. It never could have a chance. So then we're doing our little dance. Hey.
Hey, the BS dance. Ladies and gentlemen, it's become a Mac Break Weekly favorite. And we love to see Merlin and Andy in their togas doing that little thing.
Don't you think? I mean, it's like they've got the iPhone and they got the MacBook Air. If you got the coin, you can buy a MacBook Air.
I think an Air is really where to go, don't you?
I just don't see them adding another. First of all, we'll see how Michael Arrington does with his $200.
That's funny, isn't it? TechCrunch IT has announced that they're going to do an open source, open hardware tablet.
Open source hardware. Writing software for open source software for hardware is really, so far, that's been real fun to watch.
Imagine.
I'm glad my ATM runs on proprietary software.
Well, there have been a couple. OpenMoku.
Oh, yeah, that's tremendous. Have you seen the movies of people using that Linux phone?
That's gone really
tremendous.
Well.
it's great. You know, if you hold it really close to your eye, you can almost see the keyboard. So my feeling is that making really good software for a really good hardware device that does even a tenth of the things you just described is really, really hard.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I would love it.
You're
it's not going to be pretty.
Well, let's also be completely open here. Remember that with the iPhone, they released it without any third-party software. So if they just shipped it with a core number of apps that they thought people would really go for, enough to get this thing sold through Christmas, and they said, oh, by the way, in January, we're also announcing a brand new rev to the developer kit. Anybody wants to, you can take all the skills that you've already developed in developing iPhone apps and now just extend them a little bit to develop this app, and we'll have a new section of the App Store open on January. That's possible.
I think Nokia's done it. There's UMPC. I mean, this is not a category that doesn't exist.
Chipset
from Intel is designed for this stuff.
If you've walked into Best Buy and asked for UMPC and looked at the really stunned puppy dog face looks on these people's faces, you know that it hasn't been done before. I mean, they've been announced and they have their fans, especially the Nokia tablet, but no one has the ability to do a device like this, like Apple has the ability to do a device like this.
I agree. That's what we're waiting for.
Right. No, well, the whole tablet thing has been, you know, people have been talking about this for years. I mean, there were about 3 or 4 years ago, there was like a buildup of rumors towards a tablet. Like, and I really thought actually at that time the tablet would happen. I mean, you know, and sources like CNET and stuff, not just, you know, Joe's blog. But, you know, early and, you know, the Mac Daily News post was sort of questionable. You know, I mean, they admitted, I think, in their post that it was they're not sure. They just, you know, heard this and here it is. And it really reads just like a laundry list of like every wish, you know, anyone's ever had in the last year. But, you know, earlier this year, Jason O'Grady posted a seemingly credible rumor. And, you know, I've talked to him back and forth and he seemed confident about this, that there would be a tablet coming later this year. And so it would all sort of fit together. And, you know, the question is whether Apple can take it to the level where, you know, I mean, there were cell phones before, but, you know, no one really imagined how good it could be. Right. And, you know, not to be sound like a fanboy, but, you know, seriously, the iPhone, when it came out, everyone, you know, I was at the keynote and, you know, everyone's mouth was agape, you know, it's like, oh, multi-touch, you know, it's amazing. And really, you know, people are like using a browser on their cell phone, which they, they, you know, they tried before, but it didn't really work. But, you know, similarly, people are obviously, all the Apple fans are hoping, you know, can Apple, you know, add some credibility to the tablet form factor, which so far no one's been able to actually like break. And you know, Apple seems like they're willing to go into nichier areas, like with the Apple TV and even the Air, you know, so they may be willing to give it a try.
Can let me toss one thing out here. Something that I think is an interesting game to play is the let's figure out what Apple's really thinking about game, where we stop looking backward and try to really look forward. And
the chess game they're playing, the strategy that they've got.
Well, I think what's interesting is I'll just toss out an observation and then an idea. The observation is that Apple at this point so far has made a name for themselves by taking things that seem like a commodity that most people have kind of written off as not being interesting and then figured out a way to make it into a consumer cult item.
You're talking the personal computer or the cell phone?
Yes. And okay. The iPod.
Do you remember
among other people was like, hi, why would I need an iPod? I have 47 pound creative jukebox.
Yeah.
So that's one thing to always think about is what, historically, the stuff that they've had the biggest hits with as a company seem to be these things where you go, oh, I never even realized. They're like the Nirvana of electronics. They figure out this thing that seems really obvious in retrospect, but this actually was a need for. And then second, I just find myself going like, how does this fit into their bigger plan? I mean, granted, the Apple TV, I thought that was going to fit into their plan more than it has. I just don't see how the tablet, to me, that's just...
Oh, no, the tablet is perfect.
For who?
You have this... For anybody who buys movies, anybody who buys music, anybody who wants to use an internet-enabled appliance.
How big, though? If you don't want it really 12 inches. You want it kind of in between an iPhone and maybe a 12-inch, right?
Yeah, I've always thought that if you look at a standard MacBook screen and cut that in half, that's about the ideal size you're looking at, like this side, like a 5x7 size screen.
I do have to point out, though, and I know what you're saying, Merlin. I mean, Microsoft has tried this several times. Microsoft put all of its might and power and influence behind tablets. And it didn't take off.
Okay, but that doesn't even count because Microsoft is a company that likes to announce things and then hope that it gets interest enough to actually pursue it as a concept.
That's true.
Apple's if you want to look at the difference between the way Apple does things, the way that anybody else does things, every cell phone manufacturer had a year to copy the iPhone. Apple said, "Look, here's how to do it. Here's the hardware. Go." And a year later, what we have are devices that have big screens, that have touch screens, but you're still stuck with a very conventional phone where it has a certain limited set of apps that come out of the box. If it doesn't have a really good multi-touch audio player out of the box, it's never going to have one. If it doesn't have a really good multi-touch solution to outlining or any other application, it's never going to have one. Whereas Apple basically had a plan that was three different levels deep, and now we're just on level two.
But the thing I'm interested in, I hear what you're saying, and I also just want to clarify, I would probably really want one of these that existed. What I'm trying to figure out is, so, you know, one thing that made we've said this ad nauseum, one of the things that made the iPod such a game changer was that, you know, in addition to being really looking really cool and being easy to use, it brought Apple software onto a lot of people's desktop for the first time. And I think that same thing happened with the iPhone. It's bringing this whole Apple hardware and software into somebody's life for the first time. And so maybe I'm looking too much in the past, like I said I wasn't going to do, but I'm not sure what, apart from definitely selling some units, a few units, definitely to nerds, like who's this going to be a huge hit with that ends up bringing them into the Apple world? Is it students? Is it travelers, people who travel a lot? Because I see both of the stuff, most of the stuff we're talking about, I see being answered by a laptop or an iPhone. It just seems like this would be like just cannibalism.
Well, I've used in the past 3-4 weeks a lot of subnotes. And I'm not talking about Mac Air. I'm talking about the size of an EPC, only with a lot more chops behind it. And I do think that there are many of these devices that I've used. I thought, you know what? If I had $600 to spend on something like this, or $500 to spend on something like this, this is exactly the sort of thing I would want. If I had a choice between, if I were happy with my basic $50 flip phone, and I just wanted something, another level up from that, when I wanted a larger internet experience, when I wanted a larger media experience, this would be very, very attractive. Again, so long as Apple doesn't play it the way that its competitors play it, so long as they make it a unique experience, something that's not simply, hey, anybody could slap a touchscreen on this device and have a device that competes with us. No, you have to build an iPod. You have to build an iPhone.
We're going to, we have a hard out in about 20 minutes. So I want to go to our picks. And Dr. Kim, I don't know if I told you this ahead of time, but we like to pick a favorite hardware or a software device each week, and I'll invite you to participate, but you don't have to. Before we do that, I do want to mention Drobo, because there's an updated Drobo deal. You know we love our Drobos. And now Drobo has two models. They announced the FireWire Drobo. The second generation has FireWire 800, USB 2, faster speeds, quieter, cooler operation. And you can get $25 off instantly on that Drobo if you use our special deal. We'll tell you about that. Or you can get the old Drobo, the first generation Drobo, now greatly reduced in price. So you get a really good deal on that and get $25 off on that. So we've got two really good offers for you. It's very easy to take advantage of these offers. You just go to Drobo.com/MacBreak, Drobo.com/MacBreak, and you can see the special Drobo deals. But I do like this new Drobo. I haven't got one yet. I'm really excited about the FireWire 800. So if you want to know more and get instantly $25 off the new second generation Drobo with the FireWire 800 or $25 off the original Drobo, now at a really reduced price. So it's really affordable. And by the way, that's the one I'm using still. I just added, I love Drobo because when you run low on space, it lets you know. So it went yellow and I paid no attention. Then it went red and said, you know, you're down to 48 gigs. You need to add more. And I got $119 at Newegg. I got a 750 terabyte drive. I put it in. And here's the beauty of it. You don't have to even shut the Drobo down. You just pop out the smallest drive of the four. There's four in there. That turned out to be, I think, a 320 drive. And I put in the 750. It rebuilt. It took overnight to rebuild it. But it does it all automatically. And boom, there you go. Now I have a lot more space. And it was such a good deal. I got two of the 750s. And then the next time I get the orange from Drobo, I want to replace a 400 gig drive. Then I'll have 200, two 500s, two 750s for a total of, 2.5 terabytes of data. Now, some of that's reserved by the Drobo for data redundancy. That's one of the beauties about the Drobo. You never risk a bit because of this data redundancy. But it's just great. You just slap these SATA drives in and their prices keep falling. And I keep expanding my storage. Drobo.com/MacBreak. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Okie dokie, let's see here. Andy, you just joined us. Are you ready for a pick?
I'm gonna pick a. I didn't because I was having problems with a certain popular piece of software used for voiceover IP.
We call it POS, piece of Skype.
Well, see, I'm wondering. See, again, I know so little about product marketing. I'm wondering if there was on some whiteboard somewhere they said, you know what, we have to get market share, we have to get like market penetration here. What if we make it just fail one out of every three times so that every podcast at least mentions the name of our product?
Maybe that's it.
Maybe that's free advert. You can't, you know, free. Hey, you know, as long as they spell the name correctly.
But you know, so Andy, I use Skype. You know, this network wouldn't run without Skype, and I don't have those troubles, so I don't understand it myself. I really don't.
Well, I think this is just ordinary. Hey, you're using a computer. What do you expect? There's a brand new update today, and I downloaded it without thinking. Hey, but what about that thing you absolutely have to do at 2 p.m.?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I blame myself.
I blame myself. I was just over anxious.
I just said, you know what? I just want this thing not to suck anymore. And this is, I see the door open a crack. This is the time for me to slip past the guards. So it's so tempting. I think all of us could make like an iPhone pick every week for the next 3 months because
there's so many apps.
Exactly. I mean, I wasn't going to do it this time, but I'm not. The solution to my Skype problems was to get out another computer. break the glass and get the emergency backup computer. So I'm just going to take one of the coolest apps that I've had on my iPhone. It combines everything that's cool about the iPhone. It's called Urban Spoon.
Very fun
app.
Yes. So let's say that you're in a familiar town or an unfamiliar town, and you decide that it's time to decide a place where we can all go out to eat. Urban Spoon is a slot machine for selecting restaurants.
It's the silliest thing I ever saw. I love though. Yeah.
It gets your location, and simply you have three reels of a slot machine, nearby areas, styles of cuisine, and price ranges. And just literally like a slot machine.
So funny.
like Walpole, Asian fusion cuisine, a little bit expensive. And then it'll randomly choose one restaurant that will match those three randomly selected guidelines. There's a link to it, so you can check out the reviews, check out the website. If you think that, well, you know what, I'm actually interested in fusion cuisine, but I don't want to drive that far, and actually I don't want to spend $4 signs worth of money, you can lock down the fusion cuisine part of it, have it, you know, randomize again, and it's a, you're just sort of like, you know, I am actually like in a place where I know where every single restaurant is within a 20-mile radius. I'm actually using this just to find out what it turns up for me.
Yeah.
And it's free. So again, you know, to offset that $439 iPhone app that's out there, it's using some of the carbon units that some of these like professional sales tools are burning up.
Right. It's Urban Spoon, and Merlin, it is a classic first world problem. I don't know where we should eat.
Well, I think they should add a sixth bell for something that's incredibly expensive.
Actually, no. I think you don't use the Thurston Howell voice. You use the Ralph Cramden voice. Like, look, I'm gonna have this machine choose a place at random. No arguments.
I can't figure out where to go.
I learned about Urban Spoon the other night. Somebody demanded that I use it because it was so cool, and I really, really like it. But I think I don't disagree with you, Andy, because I really do like it. But it's also emblematic of a basic problem with these apps, which is that they're almost useful. Like, it's so almost useful. But then here's what happens. So, like in San Francisco, you know, it finds where I am, which is cool, and it has my neighborhood, and it has my neighborhood as part of an alphabetical list. So, okay. the thing is, like, I live in the Sunset, but right. I also live near West Portal, right. And I also live near and so on and so on. You see where I'm going with this. It would be really cool to like make it even smarter. You know what I mean? And I don't know. I mean, there's stuff like where it seems, some of the stuff seems a little bit rushed out the door with like just for the gee whiz. And I'm not against that. Some of the stuff's really fun. Right. But I mean, the thing that's exciting to me is like, these are so, and I'm sorry, I'm dragging this on, but I think there's so much potential with this stuff. And I think as people use these more, stuff like Urban Spoon is going to be awesome. And I'll be able to bring in a Yelp-like component of going like, okay, what's open right now? Like, stuff like that is huge. And that's the kind of thing you can do with APIs that would make this stuff really useful, which is like, what's open right now? And then bring in OpenTable and go like, okay, what's open right now where I can get a seat? Do you know what I mean? And suddenly this goes from being a toy into being like a real application that like you could use rather than just demo.
Well, and I know we need to move on. I'll just say that I love the fact that both the hardware and the software development kit is provoking such creativity in developers that they get this weird idea for an app and they just have to write it. They're the idea of not writing this stupid little, you know, the three card Monty version of dining out. That's just not an option. They have to do it.
It's funny. I just counted how many Mac apps I have on my iPhone. I have 33 apps.
And yeah. We need an application manager now.
And all of them are exactly like that. They kind of just do it. You know,
talking to my friend Dom this morning. I'm going to be speaking at his iPhone dev camp thing at Adobe in a few weeks. And I was like, you know what we need? We need expose. Like, we need a way to show all of our screens. I was trying to move stuff around from one place to another. And it's talk about a first world problem. That was a real pain.
Dragging those little icons. Yeah. You know, what I started doing is making room in the home bar, putting an icon there, sliding the screen I want. Then taking
it's a
it
drop
out of
drawer.
There.
It's like a Pathfinder. You made a little drop stack.
Yeah,
that's so smart.
But it's really neat. If you've got an iPod Touch, you need to be able to use that as a second screen.
That's it, Andy. That's where you put your palettes. That's your palette monitor.
Well, no, one for your cool system clock.
Pretty soon, we'll be walking down the street holding four iPods in our hands like this. Kind of, oh yeah, I've got a widescreen here.
I also like when I'm going to calculate what kind of tip to leave. I like to do it in a couple different applications just to make sure it's the same.
And four different currencies. I agree. Yeah, sometimes I leave euros.
Because 6.28% is really a hard calculation to carry out. You want to make sure there's a carrying error.
Is that how much you tip, Andy?
No, you have to dump soup on my head not to get 20% out of me.
Just for outstanding service, they get 6%.
If you date a waitress even for like 3 weeks, you will know how well to tip.
Yeah,
I've been a waiter, and I know that like there's an unbelievable number of terrible tippers that are slightly offset by the people who tip.
Exactly.
Like
that's why you have to over tip. You're making up for all that. Yeah,
that's that.
Sigh. Okay, good pick there. I'm going to throw in a pick. We're still, Arnold, I'm still giving you some time. I'm stretching this out.
right. I got one.
You got one? You want to do? Go ahead then. You go ahead.
Sure. Okay. No, I mean, it's an iPhone app, of course. I mean, you know, it's what else have I been doing the last 2 weeks? But, you know, I've been actually reviewing a lot of games because I've been doing a game review site at Touch Arcade. And so I've been playing a lot of games. That's been my primary focus.
Good. I want to know what the best games are because there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. And, you know, there's definitely ones that aren't so good. And I guess, you know, what surprised me is on day one was this inexpensive game, $3,
Poker.
Called Dizzy Bee.
Dizzy Bee. Oh, I'm writing this down.
D-I-Z-Z-Y-B-E-E. And it looks like it's just like an independent developer who I guess has been working on it since they announced the SDK and then, you know, managed to get it in the App Store day one. And yeah, I guess what was most, I mean, so it's a simple game. It's an accelerometer based game. You have a little round bee and you tilt your phone to sort of collect the little flowers. And then you're also supposed to free the fruit. So it sounds very abstract, but you go and you basically, it's all gravity based, you know, so you're tilting your phone to try to move the bee and you have to also avoid the, you know, the bad guys, who are also gravity based. So, you know, you're trying to manipulate one, you know, you're not to get smushed by the bad guys. It sounds, it's easier, you know, easier to see it, but it's only $3. It has a lot of polish to it. Like you run it and it feels like just a really well-polished game, you know, compared to a lot of the other stuff out there. And it's only $3. It has a lot of levels. It'll just provides a lot of entertainment. And I thought it was a really good example.
Any game where you got to free the fruit, I'm 100% behind it.
I've been donating that for years.
I could not walk across Tremont Street for 3 hours because there was one of those free the fruit parades. I support the cause, but sometimes you just want to get to the movie theater.
You know what? It's the lifestyle that bothers me. It's not the people. It's the fact that people are out there and they're carrying fruit.
You know, sometimes a banana, sometimes a pear. You don't even know.
Yeah, it's not right.
And they share fruit. Did you
none know? Of that fruit's in the Bible.
None of it. Do they have pineapples in the Bible? I don't think so.
Fail.
Fail. It's an epic fail.
Said it once.
Never read Joshua. Somebody's never read Joshua.
Are there pineapples in Joshua?
Oh, well, because you're a pious man, Leo, of course you know that.
I didn't know that.
I didn't want to embarrass you.
They're playing a pineapple, walking around playing a pineapple, and the walls came down, right? Is that it?
Now you're just making light. I don't appreciate that.
See, if I had one of the 32 Bible applications for the iPhone on my iPhone, I would have known. I could have searched for pineapple, and I would have known that.
Hi, boss. I just downloaded the entire King James Bible onto my iPhone. I might be a while. How much?
Did you guys try out that iGod app? It's really amazing. It works great for 6 days, and then it takes a break. Anyway, waka waka waka.
So any other, just, you know, you could do more than one pick. You could do more than one pick, Arnold. And I think in the game category, I'm always interested in what's out there.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously honorable mention to you all heard of Aurora Faint.
Oh, that was going to be my pick. I love Aurora Faint. Yeah.
No, go ahead. I mean, it's another example of just sort of, you know, independent developers sort of, you know, making a name for themselves. Yeah.
Free. And it's better than Bejeweled. And it's free. Are they going to, do you think they're going to go somewhere with that? I mean, right now it's kind of a Bejeweled game, but they've added a store and you kind of level up. And so it kind of has this MMO feel to it. Are they going to, do you think
they
go
say it's, yeah, they say it's the first, oh, can you hear me? Oh yeah. They say it's the first step in the first installment of a larger online game. So this is, I think theoretically you build up your character in this, in Aurora Faint. And then later I assume they'll have other installments that, you know, you do different things with.
Very cool.
So it sounds like it's a big plan. There's a big plan.
Graphically and musically and creatively, it's one of the best apps out there and it's free.
Yeah. They use the accelerometer very well. I mean, you know, that's very interesting. You know, they use it in the middle of you can use it in the middle of the game.
And I haven't gotten to that part yet. Oh, neat.
Oh yeah. If you're when you're next time you're playing, just turn your iPhone and the rules change a little. So you can do more.
Oh, that's neat. That's called Aurora Faint, and that one's free. So Dizzy Bee and Aurora Faint.
Yeah.
Before we get to your pick, Andy, and my pick too, because now I'm going to come up. I have to come up with another one, but I have plenty. As I said, 32 applications. Let's mention Audible.com because we have Audible is of course one of our sponsors too, and I want to mention that they are there for you, ready and waiting with a book to listen to. You know, I finally finished Neal Stephenson's Anathema, and it was kind of hard for me to read an audio book. I mean, read a printed book, not an audio book. I mean, 1,000 pages of paper, and my eyes are kind of tired. I'm thinking, what do I do now? Oh, thank goodness I've got audible.com. And I fired up the iPhone, and I listened to some audiobooks, and my eyes got a nice rest. There are plenty of times when you can't read. Maybe you're driving, you're in the gym, you're working in the garden, you're just taking a walk. Audible brings those books with you, and such great books, 50,000 wonderful titles. Andy, we usually get your pick, but Merlin actually has an Audible pick, something you just read, right, Merlin?
I'm still reading it. I don't know if this is channel conflict. I'm actually reading it on the Kindle, but it's a really good book, and it is read by the author.
It is on Audible, and I listened to it on Audible, so I...
Yeah, really interesting author, and it's called On Writing, and it's written by the novelist Stephen King. And it's really good. For somebody who's theoretically a professional writer, I'm a terrible writer. I've always been a terrible writer, and I struggle, and I fall into terrible habits. I way overuse M dashes and semicolons. Everything I post on my site is a first draft. I mean, if you read stuff I actually write in real places, it's kind of better. But, you know, I'm constantly struggling with that. And whenever I read a writing book, there's a part of me that's looking for inspiration, and there's a part of me that's looking for really just sound advice and thoughts on how to turn this into more of a craft, which is something I aspire to, even if I don't do it every day. And this is a very entertaining book that does all those things. Starts out with no introduction. Well, you know, Stephen King, he loves his introductions and his prefaces. I always jump straight to the first chapter because I think he overdoes it a little. But he jumps straight into telling wonderful stories about his life. He just opens with these great, and you know, say what you will about Stephen King, the guy, his ability to describe things his descriptions of things are so lively, and you really feel like you're there and you see the people, great stories. And you start to get the gist at the first third of the book, or however long, it's hard to tell when you're reading on a Kindle. It's just kind of him telling little stories that end up telling you a lot about him. Yeah. And the story about him being really poor and basically doing laundry like his mom had done for a living, and then finding out that like the rights to Carrie had sold for $400,000 or something. It's really moving. But then when he gets into the heart of the book, he talks about really how to tell good stories and how to develop what he calls a toolkit for doing this in a way that brings some craft to it. And I don't know, it's really been a very inspiring book for me. And it's made me want to really try a lot harder to be a good writer. And it's just full of really entertaining stories. Even if you're an aspirational writer, I think you'll really enjoy what he has to say.
Couldn't agree more. I love this book. And it made me stop using adverbs, which anything that can make me stop.
You know what's hilarious? If you go back, so this inspired me. I haven't read a Stephen King book since Night Shift in high school. It's short stories.
He's a good writer, actually. He's a great
writer. Is, but what's hilarious, go pick up Carrie.
Yeah.
And between Carrie and The Stand, his writing gets so much better. It's full of adverbs. Yeah. It's full of all these terrible.
Quietly,
adverbs.
She walked up the stairs.
Yeah.
Sadly, she told her mother.
I'm not against adverbs, but I think he makes a great point about trying not to. If you go, actually, you know, one point, Gina Trapani, before her Lifehacker days, Gina actually made, I think it was a bookmarklet that would go through and identify all the adverbs in something you just to say, like, can this really be accomplished better with a verb somewhere? Right. But anyway, I got to say, thinking out loud here, but I think I'm probably going to do a series of posts on 43 Folders about my favorite writing books. And this is definitely going to be on the list. Stephen King's On Writing. He began the book before his awful accident in which he almost died, being hit by a van, and finished it afterward. So he brings
a
lot of
stories in there. The stories in there of that, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very powerful.
You don't want to hit Stephen King with a van. He's not going to be happy about it.
No.
He's not going to be in a real forgiving mood.
Two words, pig blood. Okay, that's all I have to say. By the way, another book I want to add to your list. You've probably read it already, but another great writing book that just really inspired me. Bird by Bird.
Oh, and it's a great book on tape too.
Yep, it's available. We don't call it on tape.
Audio. Sorry.
It's available from audible.com. Bird by Bird: Some Instructions on Writing and Life by the Great Annie Lamott. That is another just truly inspiring.
If you had to make two columns of books and you had to put in the one column, it's very hard to do. But in the one column, I would put books like William Zinsser's On Writing Well and Strunk and White and some of those books. And then the other one, the books like Writing Down the Bones and Bird by Bird and On Writing, I would put that a Bird by Bird very near the top.
They're inspirational. They're not as instructional as say. They're
practical too. I mean, I refer to it a lot on 43 Folders. One of the single greatest things anyone has ever said about writing is her talking about she keeps a 1-inch square picture frame on her desk. And she always tells herself, all I need to do is fill the equivalent of that picture frame. And if you're somebody who struggles with procrastination or who worries about being able to get started, all you need to do is fill that frame. And that was such inspiring advice to me.
That is good. I like that. I'm going to start doing that. A couple of great books there, but On Writing from the Stephen King On Writing. He reads it. It's incredible. Annie Lamott reads hers, Bird by Bird. So a couple of very good books. Look, you get the idea. Audible, it's great for readers and writers and anybody who's listening. If you like podcasts, you'll love audiobooks from audible.com. audible.com/MacBreak. That's the site to get your free book. We thank them so much for their support of MacBreak Weekly. Andy, I'm sorry we stole your pick, but just save it for next week.
Okay.
He probably has a great pick.
I mentioned an iPhone game because I had a very solid Mac pick that I will then give tomorrow, next week. Rather.
Really? You don't want to, since we're all going to do iPhones?
No, because I'm not, again, I'm on my backup Mac right now. I don't have the app in front of me and I can't really talk about it.
Okay. No, that's good.
I know that it's one of two words that's inside my head. I'm going to say the wrong one if I try to go blindly.
I know that feeling. I do that all the time.
I did not start this show garlanded in success. I don't really think that this is my day to start.
Garlanded. That's a good word. Good? I like that.
Yeah, that's good. So what is your pick? What is your pick then?
Oh, well, you already heard it. Remember I talked about he said, scroll, Urban Spoon.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I can talk about another one. I'll happily make another pick then.
Why did I do that? It was Merlin that was next. So you go ahead. Good. You know what, Matt, these iPhone apps are so small. Pick two. They're small.
Okay. Now, you talk about games that really exploit the sort of platform that it's on. This is the simplest damn game. It's a dice poker game in which you shake the dice by simply shaking the iPhone. It's like it's like Yahtzee. Okay. This is spur of the moment because it's you can tell that it's an early iPhone app because it has really, really easily like isolated and easily marketable names like poker to do.
something you'd find on a PBS.
so just Google for poker. Yeah, global thermonuclear war, tic-tac-toe.
Motion X. I think this is the one. Motion X poker.
Yes, thank you. Motion X poker. Yeah. It's beautifully done. The dice move like based on real physics. The noise is great, and you're essentially playing poker with five dice. And you understand why you want to be in the casino business because it becomes almost a meditative act. You just, you shake it up, you listen for the clack, 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 you wait for it to stop. Then the dealer, deals his, and you simply select, okay, I got two kings, I'll keep those, two jacks, I'll keep those, shake it again. Let's see what I get now. I'm getting a 10.
Oh, that's fun. Poker dice. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
And again, it sounds so simple and so stupid, but again, I've downloaded about 7, 8, 9 really complicated games that look great on screen, but I'm just not playing them. Whereas this thing, you know what? If I'm in line and I got a minute and a half to kill, I'm playing this dice game. So it's definitely
really
one of those things. Motion X Poker, you're correct. It's $4.99. So it's not a 99-cent game, but there's lots of quality inside this thing. And again, unlike the 48 level 3D Canyons of Doom or whatever that's coming out tomorrow, you're not going to sit there on your couch for 3 hours playing this.
Games. I think a phone should have casual games on them. Right. Stuff you do in the dentist's waiting room, stuff like that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I like. Have you played? You've all played the Texas Hold'em. I think it's the most popular app right now on the Mac. I think that's pretty good. When I want to show people what the iPod is or the iPhone is capable of, I show them that because of the video involved in it. It's such a vivid experience. I mean, the guys are actually playing it. Do you not like it as well as your dice game?
I have, I actually, now this is going to reveal a lot about me. I got so super saturated by poker in the media last year and the year before.
This is it. This is Texas Hold'em. It's that
I'm just like, you know what? This is one of 41 of them, and they're all going to be co-licensed with characters I'm supposed to know about because they're famous poker players, you know, but I just give, you know, that's too many cards to keep track of. Give me, you know, 5 6-sided dice. I can count to 5. That'll do it for me.
I like this is a very good Texas Hold'em implementation, and the movie makes it very realistic, and you're playing against real people. I mean, of course, there's a lot of repetition in it. Let's see, I've got an ace, queen of spades. That's pretty good. I'm going to bet that one. I'm going to go all in. Let's just go all in on that one. There we go.
And is it live network play?
There is LAN play. There isn't network play, and that's kind of an interesting situation. I mean, I wonder if we're going to see that. A flush. Oh man, is it my flush? Let's see if I won or lost. I guess I'm out of the game. Okay, well that was fun. One hand and I'm done. it's a casual game. So you're recommending the which poker? It's called the Motion X Poker.
It's called Motion X Poker. And before I get all high and mighty, at some point there's going to be like a poker blog about this, and it'll ruin it for this version of poker for me too. But again, it's a simple idea with perfect execution.
Yeah, I thought it's not poker, but now that I know it's poker dice, that looks like fun.
Yeah, plus it's fun because as you make more money, you can get access to better tables, so you can make bigger bets. There are 3 dozen, 4 dozen different kinds of dice, and the first time that you get 5 of a kind, you unlock a special pair of dice. You win 10 in a row, you unlock another special pair of dice. It keeps being fun.
All right. I'm going to recommend an application that is kind of just purely informational. In fact, somebody in the chat room, I think, told me about it. It's from Bloomberg. Have you seen normally I wouldn't have, I'm not interested in a stock application. In fact, I moved the stock application way off to the side. You know, I created a page for unused.
First thing I did was move that as far away.
Yeah. But this one is kind of interesting. This gives you a lot more information. Why I'm picking it is really because it's so beautiful. It's just a gorgeously done application. And for instance, if you rotate the phone, the graphs take up the whole screen all of a sudden, and you can choose. You can use it. Uses the pinches on the graphs. It's got business news in it. It's just, I mean, I have no interest in this stuff, and yet the implementation is so good. I'm making it a pick just because I think, you know, and certainly if you are following stocks, you're going to be very interested in this. It's from Bloomberg. Uses the Bloomberg news wires. It has, you know, when you're following a stock, it has stories about it. It has great graphing, but it's really done a nice job, I think, of using the iPhone interface. I think it's just a gorgeous application. I was very impressed by this. Also free. So if you just want to take a look at, I think, the future of informational apps on the Mac, I think this might be it. I have to say I've been very disappointed with the newsreaders so far, and I'm looking for something that has this kind of polish in a newsreader, and I'd love it if anybody has a good one.
Isn't that weird that you think that there, I think like 3-4 months ago, it came up a list of the 5 big absolute no-brainer apps for that. There's going to be a million of them, and at least 2 of them are going to be great. One of them would be an application that's an RSS newsreader that downloads everything to your internal store so that when you are in airplane mode, you still have just hours and hours of reading. I have yet to find a single one that either understands what this application needs to do or does it barely well.
Yeah. I was hoping that Newswire would be it. You know, still Google Reader on Safari is probably the best. But I agree with you. It needs to download all that stuff ahead of time.
Yeah.
Who's left? Anybody not done a pick? Merlin, did you do your pick?
Oh.
I think you... Oh, Merlin.
I'd like to.
Please do a pick.
I'm going to go quick. My favorite application for the Trio is now a pretty good application for the iPhone. But it's, to me, an essential application that, while I hope it improves, I think is pretty terrific. And that's Splash Shopper. Back on the Trio, what are you laughing at? What's funny?
Is this a shopping list program?
Yes.
Okay.
can I tell you why it's good?
Does it have a tip calculator in it?
No, can I tell you why it's good?
Why?
It's really cool. Here's the thing. Here's a basic cornerstone. I hate to be the freaking GTD guy.
No, but you are.
I don't like wearing that mantle, but I will toss out an element of GTD that I think is valuable, which is the idea of ubiquitous capture.
Yes.
As I like to summarize, the time that you tend to remember that you're out of toilet paper is not while you're in the toilet paper aisle at Safeway. Mm-mm. Infer. Mm-hmm. And so really, I think a good shopping list application is great. But here's the problem. Like, what about when you capture stuff, you get up in the morning, you're drinking coffee, and you realize you're out of half and half. So, you know, are you going to capture that, you know, on your iPhone, maybe, but it would be really nice to be able to capture that at your computer. Well, what Splash Shopper does, it does several things well. First of all, it ships with a whole bunch of really interesting lists in them. Ideas for things like, here's books that I should get, or here's music I should get, or here's movies I should get. Here's things I need to do when I travel. I love this. I have a default travel list that I use of like, remember to charge the iPod, do this thing, leave a note, hide a note for my wife somewhere. Like all this stuff that I just want to remember to do while I'm in the rush of getting ready to catch a plane. And you can reuse that list. It's non-destructive. And so you can start over and say, okay, mark all as needed. And it was a great application for the Trio and / the Mac desktop. And then, you know, whatever, they stopped making the desktop version. They made it, but they never did anything to improve it. It was still all like whatever weird, not Cocoa. It doesn't have services, you know, whatever. We don't care. It's just Macs. Who cares? Well, wonder of wonders, now they're very interested in Apple. Ah. And so they make an iPhone version of this that syncs with the desktop version, which I think is amazing. So I can go in and make a list of stuff. And so, for example, rotisserie chicken that my family enjoys, I could get this at Costco, or I could get this at Safeway, or I could get this at Fubar Bat. And for any items that I'm going to use like that, I can enter in the price. If it's a one store I always get it from, I can enter in the aisle number. Personally, I think that's a little bit fussy. But it's a really powerful application if you really want a tricked out way you never have to think about grocery lists again.
And it's a to-do list too, it looks like.
It can be. But I'll tell you, if somebody says to me, if I'm sitting there at House of Prime Rib and somebody goes, oh, you should try this Ola BC Syrah from 2005. Why do I remember that? I remember that because I wrote it down in Splash Shopper. Will I remember that tomorrow morning if I hadn't written it down?
No.
Hint? No.
Yeah.
So this is great. And it syncs. So when you come home, all their stuff is marked. And then it's, anyway, I just find it really helpful. They also do Splash Data. They do a whole bunch of different stuff. I'm very happy to see them coming back to the Mac stuff and the Apple stuff. I hope that they continue improving the app because I think it could use a little polish for the iPhone. But it's definitely very promising and good to watch. And I'm trying to find the price.
It's $10. $10 for the... but now, do you have to buy the desktop as well, or is the desktop
free?
See,
that's the thing. I think you need to buy the desktop version too. There was some deal where they were saying it's the one... This their page needs a little bit of tidying up. There's a lot here. But I think there's... Yeah,
desktop
sure.
software is free to current licensees.
I think you might need to buy the desktop version.
Yeah, it looks like you have to buy it. Yeah.
But anyway, and like, is this too much to pay for a to-do list app? Yes, if that's how you use it. I've used this application with much delight for probably 5 years now. So it doesn't owe me a nickel. And yeah, I mean, is it the same thing as one of these doofus, like, unsyncing to-do apps? I mean, like, why would you even bother? And yes, could you do this with just a note list? Well, you could, but you can't reuse it. And, you know, another cornerstone of GTD and of Inbox Zero is like, where does this go? Well, this goes into the right list. And so Splash Shopper for me is the place where any kind of ephemeral, I might want this information someday while I'm out and about stuff tends to go. And it's at splashdata.com. And I like it a lot. Although I do hope they improve it. I also like it a lot.
I wish I could. I can't figure out what the price is for the desktop, but it is.
I think it's $30.
$30. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
What does it do without the desktop? Just the syncs?
I think it's just an iPhone app then, which for most people might be enough.
Okay. So
go to the iPhone.
I've got.
Yes. Yes.
It's $20 for desktop only, and then $10 for the iPhone.
iPhone and iPod Touch software for $9.95 and desktop for $19.95.
Right.
There you go. Okay. So, sorry, Andy, what were you going to say?
No. I'm just saying that I've got the page in front of me, and I've still got like $10 left of free demo money. And if I click on buy app and it stinks.
You know what? I will buy you, let's say, 6 tip calculators at my own expense. I'll have them recalibrated to 6% for you. I'll talk to Hockenberry. He can probably do this. I'll have him hack together a 6% tip calculator.
6.28, yeah. Got to get it right. Now, actually, I think there are as many tip calculators as there are flashlight applications on the iPhone.
So. I love the flashlight. I think that's hilarious. You know, have you played the game? Have you played the game where you have to hold the button?
No.
Yeah.
It's the best. The best game on here. Andre, by the way, my friend Andre Torres, Torres.org, Andre is killing with this game. He's up to like 46 minutes. It's a game where there's a big button in the middle, yeah, and then you hold it as long as you can.
And that's it?
Well, yeah, it's a skills challenge.
Also known as Chuck Norris terrorist movie Kill Switch.
Okay. Don't let go, whatever you do. Oh, my goodness. Arnold, I hope you're not too appalled by what you have just heard here today.
Arnold.
I'm still here.
Or haven't been put asleep by it, but I'm so glad you could join us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
We'll have you back anytime you want. We're big fans of Mac Rumor, MacRumors.com. And what's the name of the new the game site you're writing for?
TouchArcade.com.
Is that new?
It's pretty new, yeah. It's been sort of slow. You know, there weren't obviously that much to update before the App Store launch, so we've been sort of busy the last week and a half.
So this is yours?
It's half mine, half a friend's.
Excellent. TouchArcade.com. I'm going to add it to my list. It looks really like a great place to go and a great place to find out which games are the ones to download for your iPhone. Very cool. And MacRumors.com. Thank you, Arnold, for joining us. Really appreciate it. Also want to thank Andrew Inotko for stopping by. I'm sorry you had such troubles with Skype. We appreciate your barreling through those and making it to the show today.
You know what? It's a long, long, hard slog through an uphill battle. But, you know, by putting the chase to the wine house and then getting the bat off the shoulder, it was all worthwhile. Am I right?
Absolutely. You came to play. Never have so many done so little for so few.
You got to be in it to win it. Am I right?
I think you're right. And Mr. Merlin Mann, he's at youlooknicetoday.com. That's his great, roughly weekly podcast. One of the funniest shows. The funniest shows.
Oh, no, that's not necessary.
It is absolutely true. There is nothing better. And I don't just say on an iPod. I mean anywhere. It is so good. You and Sandwich and Scott Simpson are just fantastic. You've found a groove.
I appreciate that. Yeah. We got a new You Look Nice Today ringtone you can get. Okay. It's been remixed. So if you go to youlooknicetoday.com, you can pick up. It goes like this. Boop, 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 boop. And now it will be in your head.
It is the most annoying ringtone ever. YouLookNiceToday.com and, of course, 43folders.com. Thank you all for being here. Another Mac break.
Just broke.